buzzer has sounded. We are headed to overtime with William Pattison on Fox Sports Knoxville. This is Fan Run Radio.
And here we go. Hour number two, live from the White Claw Hard Seltzer Studios. It's overtime. William Pattison, Dawson Wise joining you on a Friday, wrapping up your week. 865-288-3131, your number if you want to hop in and join. Great first hour. We'll continue it here in the second, talking the Vols and Gators. About to set to start again here in a minute, I guess. Do we have any updates on that?
It was 7:01, 7:02 first pitch time, so we should be getting underway.
Should be going on right now, 7:02 on the dot. Vols Gators headed to game two after winning game one earlier this afternoon. Later on in the hour, we'll have In the News with Dawson Wise. But first, we head to the association where we had a pair of games last night, and a pair of teams are headed to the dirty waters of Galveston, Texas. The New York Knicks held off the Philadelphia 76ers in a close game six to advance to the Eastern Conference semifinals and will face off against the Indiana Pacers. The Knicks and 76ers delivered a thriller of a series that saw Jalen Brunson erupt for a game-high 41 points in New York's 118-115 win last night. The Sixers' Joel Embiid nearly matched Brunson with 39 points. In Indianapolis, Damian Lillard was a go for the Milwaukee Bucks against the Pacers last night in Game 6 after missing Games 4 and 5 with a right Achilles tendonitis. Lillard produced a game-high 28 points, but it was not enough. The Pacers routed the Bucks 120-98, eliminating Milwaukee from the playoffs, and then had a little bit of a situation, I'll call it, at the end of the game with Patrick Beverley. It's kind of a rendition for him now. Like, when his team gets bounced, I'm going to do something that I shouldn't. Remember when he pushed Chris Paul in the back?
And get talked about for a week or 2 weeks after the series when they get bounced.
Yeah, we'll talk more about that Patrick Beverley situation within the news with Dawson, and we'll cover it here for a second as well. But weird and really good result in a big-time penalty, I mean, to start the year. I mean, that's fan interactions like that. That's how you get Malice in the Palace 2.0, you know. And you can't do that. I mean,
I don't think this series was not heated enough, nor is throwing a ball at someone
enough to
make that happen. But I see where you're coming from.
I agree. But I'm just saying, like, you know, that could possibly lead to it.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
I mean, first off, it hits the woman in the head, and the guy grabs it, and then the guy in front of him, who's all jacked up, you know, I mean, ripping the seams out of that Tyrese Halliburton jersey, he stands up, and they throw it back. I mean, that's how things get out of hand. And as an association, you can't have that going on. But
right.
we'll talk more about that later on. Knicks-Pacers will now meet for a game one in New York on Monday. I'm sure that will be a ruckus environment. Let's begin with the Pacers and Bucks series. In a series that had become less about the players available and more about tactics and counters, the Pacers, who had relied incredibly heavily on production from their starters, needed an edge in game six, and they got one. During the regular season, Indiana led the league in bench scoring with 46.8 points per game, boasting names like Benedict Mathurin out of Arizona, Buddy Hield. But both of those guys, Benedict gets hurt, Buddy Hield gets traded, and you add that with Jalen Smith and Isaiah Jackson largely glued to the bench, the Pacers needed some stabilization because they didn't have a whole lot outside of their starting group. And then you enter in McConnell and Toppin, and congrats to Dawson.
My audible bet from last night.
He called an audible last night on our best bet series, or segment, I should say. And Obi Toppin, 20-plus points. I wonder what those odds were.
I have no idea. I can't even
remember. Probably good.
I saw it, and I can't even remember what it was.
Yeah.
Plus three something. I can't remember.
Well, there you go. They were the heroes of Game 6 last night. They averaged a combined 20 points per game during the regular season. They totaled 41 together last night. Talking about what they're able to do, it's very similar in the Mavericks series. You know, there's a lot of attention on Luka and a lot of attention on Kyrie. In this Pacers series, there's a lot of attention on Pascal Siakam and Tyrese Halliburton. So when the defense is so focused in on your two stars, you've got to have your complementary pieces play well and be an impact like Obi Toppin was yesterday. Multiple times left open for three, and then when you get him in transition, you already know how – much of a high flyer he is. So you naturally work him in the transition, but if you're able to get three-point shots from him consistently like they were able to do last night, that's where you, you know, win a game like this by, you know, 20, 30 points in a closeout game. And talking about McConnell, you know, a guy that also hit a couple big shots, a big three-pointers. Not traditionally a three-point shooter, but you know what you get defensively with him. You know what you get playmaking-wise with him. When you're able to get consistent buckets from him as well, those are the type of performances that change a series, and that's what happened last night.
For both of them combined, clutch shooting is what I wrote down. Notably, you know, McConnell's early fourth quarter three kind of was the dagger in the series.
Yeah.
But both guys had big moments where, you know, you hit shots that start a run, you hit shots that extend a run. You know, both guys acted as the spark plugs. It's a term we use here quite a bit that we talked about during the Tennessee season of guys that electrify the team, guys that, you know, take up the mantle of, hey, rally around me and we're going to win this ball game. That's what McConnell and Toppin were for the Pacers last night. McConnell, mostly defensively, you know, he did have 20 points, but constant defensive presence.
Yeah.
And obviously that was what kind of helped Indiana get over the hump. They played a really good defensive game last night, especially late in that game. From there, it just does not feel like he could make the wrong play.
No.
It was always the right play. No matter what he was doing, it was the right play. It ended up, you know, resulting in points or being points for himself.
Yeah.
It was always the right play. And that sometimes, look, the right play in the right moment is more important than you know, a guy that can score 45 points, 45 points. For Toppin, it's the energy. I mean, you want to talk about, go back to spark plug, Obi Toppin. This guy plays with some of the most energy and fire that you're going to see on a basketball court. Energy on the defensive side, was able to convert that into offense, like you said, in transition, not only for himself, for his teammates as well. He's always been that type of guy. Last night, biggest example of it, and man, two of the unlikely heroes of the series. If you told me before the before Game 6 started that Indianapolis's leading two players in the game would be T.J. McConnell and Obi Toppin, I would not have believed you.
Yeah. You know, you talk about the defense. I also want to give credit to Andrew Nembhard. What a job he did this series against Damian Lillard. And I know if you go look at the box score, you're like, William, what the hell are you talking about? You know, Damian Lillard had, you know, what, 28 points last night, big performances, Game 1, Game 2. He was able to make him uncomfortable, though, picking him up full court. You know, the box score might not reflect it, but Andrew Nembhard did a really good job. And I think the Pacers did a really good job of, look, we're the younger, more inexperienced team in this series. What do we have to do to give us an edge? And it was providing defense like that, that kind of being that pest, that Patrick Beverley-style defense, picking up full court, just making your presence felt. And then also, you know, they were able to feed off their home crowd and feed off of their other guys and McConnell and Obi Toppin being those spark plugs. The Pacers did everything they needed to do last night, and it, you know, it helped that they were playing at home. Moving on to the Bucks now, as injuries piled up, the Bucks didn't have enough in this first round series against the Pacers. They might have been able to advance if the rest of the starting lineup had stayed healthy, but there were too many injuries. Chris Middleton misses some time. Bobby Portis gets thrown out of a game very early on. I think it was game four,
yeah.
Yeah, game four gets thrown out. So basically that's like missing a whole, you know, missing a game due to injury. Chris Middleton suffers injuries as well. This will end up being a disappointing season for them. Not because, you know, they necessarily underperformed in the win column, but it's now the second year in a row they've had big-time injuries in the biggest moment of the year. I was never a fan of this Bucks team. I've been very outspoken about it. I thought they made a bad choice trading for Damian Lillard. I love Damian Lillard, the player. I think he's incredible. But what you lost defensively, I thought was monumental. And that's Jrue Holiday, Grayson Allen, your two best perimeter defenders. And that's why, as a result, the Bucks were in the bottom half of the defensive numbers in the NBA this year, compared to being usually top two, top three, top four, top five. So I think a lot of people will take this series and say, the Bucks will be good. They just lost their players. You know, they battled injuries. Losing Giannis definitely hurt. So I understood that was going to be the scapegoat. Now they lose Damian Lillard and Chris Middleton. That adds to it. So I understand that is a big role. But I never thought this team was even going to beat this Pacers team, even if they were healthy. Because I thought what the Pacers did in this series, and you saw it last night, you're able to get big performances from guys other than Tyrese Haliburton and other than Pascal Siakam. Miles Turner, I thought, played really, really well in this series. So talking about where the Bucks go from here, I'm dead serious. They should trade Damian Lillard. They should trade Damian Lillard and build around Giannis. That's the key piece on this team. Giannis is the guy that you need the ball in the biggest moments of the game. He needs the ball in his hands. Damian Lillard's a great guy to have in those moments, but there were too many times this year where I felt like there was an imbalance of who's taking the big shot, who's having the ball in the big moment. The Bucks had a perfect role player in Drew Holiday, unselfish guy that's not going to take the big shot, but he'll facilitate the big shot and get it done defensively. I didn't think the Bucks needed Damian Lillard. I still don't. I would trade him this offseason and see what you can get for him and see how you can build this roster around Giannis and go from there. Got to get the defense back to where it was. The Bucks are a defensive team. You've got Brooke Lopez, Giannis Antetokounmpo. Shouldn't be in the bottom half of the league.
Yeah, I'll piggyback off that. I don't think they're going to trade Damian Lillard.
I don't either, but they should.
Yeah. I'll piggyback off that. If you're not going to, you've got to get better defensively. You have no choice. I mean, this team was so far gone from where they were 2-3 years ago defensively that you need to go get players that are going to help you defensively. I know you have pieces that will help you with that already. You got to get better because you're just not getting that from guys like Damian Lillard. And combine that with the fact that, you know, number one, you were riddled with injuries all year. You need guys to help with that too. And also, you never really knew what Dame you were going to get. It's to the point now where either he's scoring 35 or he's scoring like 9, and you're not getting anything out of him. So you need to retool defensively because you're number one, you're not consistent enough offensively, and number two, it fell off so much. And you just got to accept this trade for Damian Lillard did not work. It did not do what you wanted it to. What you do about that, I don't know, but you're missing guys like Drew Holiday right now dearly. That team won an NBA championship. You break up that team and bring in Damian Lillard and you're out in 6 games. Really could have been out in 5 games if you want to think about it that way. If this team had Drew Holiday, if this team had a couple of those other defensive pieces, I don't think this series is over. I don't think they lose this series.
Yeah. They go sign Patrick Beverley too, and that was supposed to help their defense. It's kind of like putting on you ever did a sock puppet, you know what I'm talking about? Like, yeah. it's still a hand, but you just put a sock over. That's what adding Patrick Beverley did. I mean, so they have defensive problems. They realize that, but they don't have the personnel right now to have that same type of defense that they've had over the last couple of years. And I think that's what made that Bucks team so good. When you go back to that the Sun series in the finals, some of the biggest plays in that series was a block from Giannis, mm-hmm. a strip from Drew Holiday, mm-hmm. and both of those plays altered the outcome of that game.
Yep.
So I thought it was a mistake. I get it's flashy. I get it sounds well, sounds good in your head. It looks great when you're scrolling on Instagram. I didn't think it was a good trade, and I still don't. Moving on to the Knicks and 76ers, this was a 7-game series that happened to only be 6. It was a fight the whole way, as Sixers coach Nick Nurse said leading into the game, quote, nothing matters in this matchup. The Knicks crushed the 76ers on the glass, and they somehow lost. The Sixers did the same thing the next game, and they dropped that one. It was a wacky series, but it was an awesome one. Every game was down to the wire. Big performances from Tyrese Maxey, big performances from Jalen Brunson. Give Joel Embiid credit, showed up last night, played well, 39 points, even though he has struggled in this series. But I think there's only one takeaway the 76ers can have in this, and it's they've used up one more year of Joel Embiid, and they don't have a playoff series win to show for it. Embiid fouled out after dominating most of the game. Tyrese Maxey, ugly game 6, after a heroic game 5, just 17, and missing 12 of his 18 shots. Tobias Harris, and I hate to, former VFL, I hate to get him astray, but I looked up the definition of cardio last night, and it's when you get your heart rate up by running around doing motion. That's what Tobias Harris did last night. He is the first max player ever to have 0 points in a playoff game. And that kind of performance is, a huge miss for them. When you have a guy making that kind of money and he's putting up 0 points in 28 minutes and taking just 2 shots as well, not even involved offensively, that's not championship basketball. And as a result, you go home. So I think that's been his last game. But going back to Embiid, because when you look at it from the grand scheme of things, this is another 76er series with Joel Embiid, who's an MVP caliber player, and you don't have a lot of postseason success. Is he good enough to lead you to an NBA championship? I think he is, but in the playoffs, there's something about him where he just it's a switch is flipped. Because in big games, he's underperforming. Tyrese Maxey saved his ass the other night. If Tyrese Maxey doesn't have 47 points,
they're out in five games.
Yeah, they're out in five games. Now, Embiid backed it up last night when Maxey wasn't able to do it. But this is now time and time again of the process where Embiid is not getting it done in the biggest parts of the series. We go back last year, Celtics 76ers. 76ers had two opportunities to take the Celtics out, and they still couldn't do it. So I think he's good enough to lead them to an NBA championship, but I do question his playoff time and what he does in the playoffs, and I think a lot of people need to start realizing that too.
I think he's still good enough to do it. He finally got back to being himself in this game. Now, we kind of waited on a performance like this. For the most part, pace Jalen Brunson. He can still be that guy. It's just something doesn't go their way. Either he doesn't play well, Maxey doesn't play well. In terms of last night, he played very well. The cast around him did not. Now, Maxey had a decent game, but you needed more than a decent game out of him. And the rest of the cast just did not show up in the biggest moment. The fourth quarter struggles are what's going to stick in our minds as well. We talked about that this week.
Yeah.
It's going to stick in the minds of Sixers fans that when the fourth quarter of a playoff game comes around, the better player on the floor is not Joel Embiid. In this case, it was Jalen Brunson and even Josh Hart, I guess if you want to say it that way, for last night's game. The best of the best know how to go win a game in the fourth quarter, especially in the postseason. Embiid has clutch moments, but he struggled this year in the fourth quarter of this series. You need that production if you're going to be that guy that leads your team to a ring. And also, you can't go without mentioning the injury situation either. It's a guy that misses a ton of games. It's always a threat of another injury. Well, what if he injures his leg again? What if he injures, what if he injures X, Y, Z again? Mm-hmm. He won't be able to lead his team to a title if he's consistently on the sidelines. That's obvious. And it's only a matter of time before one of these injuries pulls him from a playoff game. Or a playoff series, even as we saw with Lillard and Giannis. It's only a matter of time before it happens to Embiid, and you have to keep that in the back of your mind as well.
Yeah. Now, kind of talking about where the 76ers go from here, Tobias Harris is an unrestricted free agent. I'm sure he will be gone now. I quote tweeted it earlier. Someone tweeted out, the favorites to win the Tobias Harris sweepstakes, and I go, I don't think it's a sweepstakes.
There's no sweepstakes,
and it was given the top teams, like the Detroit Pistons are like -125 to land them, and then like the Spurs were up there, yada yada. And I was like, if you're betting on Tobias Harris next location, you might as well call the hotline while you can. but talking about, where the 76ers go from here, you got to let Tobias Harris go. You've got an opportunity to add another max guy now. I'd much rather litter out my roster with guys that can play valuable minutes in a playoff series like the Knicks have. OG Anunoby, Josh Hart, Dante DiVincenzo.
Yeah.
Isaiah Hardenstein, they, found off the street. used to be a G League guy and has played well. They were able to find Hardenstein for nothing. So players like that, filling out your roster, I think is very important. You can't win a playoff series with Nicholas Batum at this point in his career. Buddy Hield was bad for all of this series until last night in the second quarter. They've got to fill out this roster with guys that can win now with this group. I thought Kelly Oubre was a good addition for him, but Kyle Lowry at this point in his career can't be the point guard of this team. And their bench was thin too. So I think the better route is, okay, Harris goes to the curb. Let's litter out our roster with shooters and guys that can play around Joel Embiid. Because if you've got guys around the perimeter that can shoot, you can get it in Embiid, they crash, and then boom, you got a three. I mean, I know it's very, simplistic to say that, but it's what they need, and I think that's what they lacked in this series when you compare the two teams. The Knicks have a better collection, and the 76ers have a more dated collection.
Yeah. Retool, start with Tobias Harris. No offense. We love him here in Knoxville, but he should be gone after this series. Just did not do enough for you to justify keeping him around. You need to refresh the supporting cast. I know you got into that. Refresh it with guys that are better than what you have now. Again, Hield, Lowry, Batum, those guys are just not going to win you a championship.
Yeah.
You need to refresh, get some different guys on the bench, get some different guys out there and work on that to try to contend. And the second thing is lock down Tyrese Maxey and throw away the key. Never let him leave Philadelphia. I know he had a rough performance in Game 6, but he's also still very early in his NBA career. He could be the co-superstar with Joel Embiid that you build around on this team. So lock down his rights forever and throw away the key as long as he's playing like this.
Yeah.
He can be that number one guy if Embiid's having an off night, if he's off in the fourth quarter, if he's hurt. And we saw him do it when Embiid was hurt this year.
Yeah.
In those cases, he can take up that mantle, be that number one guy, make sure you can keep him around for as long as possible.
Yeah, now let's move over to Jalen Brunson. What a series this was for him. They said last night on the broadcast that he's one of the first players, or he's the only other player outside of Oscar Robertson to have like 35-plus points and a certain amount of assists in like consecutive playoff games. I can't remember the exact stat, but looking at what he did, I mean, three games of 40-plus in this series, and one of them was like 37. Talk about an arrival. I thought he had an arrival in that Mavericks series back in 2021. 2021 when they played the Warriors. Had an arrival then. The Mavericks decided to move on from him. Last year, kind of was filling in the shoes of, okay, this is my team. I'm the star now. Kind of pushing over Julius Randle a little bit to the side. This year, he's become the star. And I think these playoffs have proven so far that he is a bona fide star and one of the best guards we have in the league. Performances like that is what puts you on the map. And without Jalen Brunson, where does this team go? So I think this proves that he's a star. I wouldn't say a superstar yet, but he's a star in the league. And if he continues this run in this next series, I mean, good gosh, New York's back.
Yeah, he's that guy. I mean, we knew that already from a couple postseasons ago, but this series reinforced it. When his number got called, he answered the bell every single time. Every single time he answered the bell when his number got called, when it looked like Philly was going to run this the distance, was going to send this to a Game 7, send this back to New York, Jalen Brunson said no. He said, get on my back. We're going through. We're winning this game. This series is done, and it's going to be because of me. And really, now, Josh Hart made great plays late in that game, won them the game. But they don't get to that point without Jalen Brunson. He said, we're going to win this game because of what I can do. The faith in him to be the leader was well placed. They got him so that he could eventually be this guy for them. This is the kind of faith they had in that one playoff run. Really, it was more than that one playoff run. But that kind of was what they said, hey, look at that. Yeah. We want that on our team. And it was well placed to be the number one guy in New York. He showed them last night that their trust is worth it. He's ready to take them further. And it just, man, it makes that signing look better and better and better.
It does.
Really great move for New York. And you said he's a star. I said he's getting to the bottom fringe of among the NBA's best. I mean, he's getting to that point, I think. Again, I think this next series he could reach that level. If he can keep this up, maybe he's scoring 40 a night in the second round as well. I mean, we have to start talking about it. A 44-minute performance last night, 41 points and 12 assists as well, a double-double. He knows the right play to make all the time, and he is a bona fide star.
Okay, I'm thinking, top point guards right now.
Right.
I think Luka's better than him.
Okay, that's fair.
I think...
The fact that you have to think that hard kind of reinforces what I was saying.
I think Luka's better. I think Steph Curry is better still, I would say. He didn't have a great...
For now, yeah.
Didn't have a great second half of the season,
that's
but
fair.
I still think he's
fair.
Better. Jamal Murray, what about him?
I think he's better right now, but I think if Brunson keeps this up for the rest of the playoffs, and then... I mean, especially if now I don't think the Knicks are going to get past the Celtics, but if they were and we actually got to see Murray against Brunson, I think that would give us our answer. But If Brunson keeps it up, the gap's closing, right?
Because I think Brunson's volume's higher than Murray, because Murray also, I mean, they got a really good supporting cast.
Right.
And you also got Jokic. Brunson's getting up there. I mean, John Morant, too. Don't forget about him. But
it's fair.
But I think, you know, the thing with Morant, though, you know, he hadn't played in a year, so a lot of people, you know, NBA's very recency biased.
It is.
So, obviously, right now we're watching what Brunson's doing, and we're like, okay, well, I'd take him over Morant. I'd take him over Irving. But you could also say, you know, Kyrie Irving's had some big moments. I'd have to think about it, because Tyrese Maxey's up there, too. But, you know, Brunson was more consistent in this series than Maxey was. Brunson's definitely top five. I'd say top five comfortably.
Yeah, that's fair.
And I think you could kind of play some scenarios out to where he works out from there. All right, when we come back, we've got In the News with Dawson Wise when we return here on a Friday night of overtime.
Making a better vodka soda ain't rocket science. You just got to start with a better vodka. And then voila, you get a White Claw vodka soda. Your taste buds are about to get a PhD in deliciousness. JB Smooth only drinks vodka soda made with the world's smoothest vodka.
Try the all-new White Claw vodka soda. Pick up a variety pack of their four delicious flavors. Only 100 calories, 4.5% alcohol, and 2 grams of sugar. White Claw Vodka Soda. Please drink responsibly.
Are you tired of the same boring workouts that don't get you the results that you want? Check out HotWorks. With infrared light therapy and personalized wellness options, you'll be able to get the perfect workout every time. With the hot yoga or any of the other isometric options at HotWorks, you'll feel the detoxification right away. Hop on over to 10839 Hardin Valley Road or visit any of the other Knoxville locations to get started on your personalized journey.
From high school heroes to college legends, First Bank is proud to champion our local athletes. But we don't just back you on the field or on the court. We team up with customers to score the wins that grow communities. That takes better products, more accessible, flexible bankers, and the quick answers and solutions you can run with. Don't just make the switch. Make the team that champions community. First Bank. Bank local. Get more team spirit. Member FDIC.
Citizens National Bank.
Life is more fun with a Good Life checking account, offering extra benefits, including bank travel. Join us for a trip to Mackinac Island for a stay at the beautiful Grand Hotel. Travel with us to southern Utah to witness the enormous, colorful, and unusual rock formations. Or join us on one of our many day trips. We're always on the go.
Citizens National Bank. Banking never felt so good.
Member FDIC.
Are you ready to play hard and work harder? Are you looking to take the next step in your career with a company who celebrates hard work and appreciates those who do it? Then it's time to join the movement at Axel Logistics. Axel is looking to expand their award-winning sales team with logistics consultants who are outgoing, ambitious, and thrive in a fast-paced environment. If that sounds like you, visit axellogistics.com to learn more. Make sure you tell them you heard about it on Fan Run Radio. Axel Logistics, now is your time.
Hey. Lil CC on a beat. Yeah, yeah. I mean, where the should I really even start?
All right, back here on Overtime, wrapping up your week on a Friday. We appreciate you listening along with us. 865-288-3131, your number if you want to hop in and join. But first, we head to In the News with Dawson Wise. Dawson, take it away.
We will start in the NHL. It is a big night here in the Tri-Star State. The Nashville Predators have a massive opportunity tonight. Actually, right now, it's already underway. The Preds return home to Bridgestone Arena, attempting to defend home ice and do the unthinkable, erase a 3-1 deficit, and send the series the distance to a decisive Game 7 back in Vancouver. After a topsy-turvy series that has seen momentum shifts almost every night, Nashville now lies just now about 48 minutes away. Now they played about 12 minutes in that one, from potentially bringing their season back to life. The Preds split the first 2 games in Vancouver, stealing away Game 2 with a 4-1 win. Then the wheels fell off as Nashville dropped both games on home ice, including a heartbreaking collapse in Game 4, to trail in the series 3-1, headed back to Vancouver for Game 5. But The Preds decided it was not quite time to break out the golf bags, scoring a gutsy 2-1 win on Tuesday night and forcing another do-or-die Game 6 back in Nashville. It will take the Preds' best effort tonight to again stave off elimination. Juicy Saros is the starter for Nashville. I said expected starter. He is the starter, obviously, for Nashville tonight. Vancouver gave the nod to a former AHL starter, Archer Silovs, who has played mostly lights out in his two starts, although he did get the loss in Game 5.
Mm-hmm.
Tonight will be about which stars can embrace the big moment. Will Philip Forsberg, Roman Josi, and company be able to lift Nashville to their biggest win since 2018? Or will Brock Besser, Elias Pettersson, JT Miller, and the Canucks put the series to bed? A couple quotes before the game from some Preds players. The win gives us some momentum, but you've also just got to focus on Game 6. That's from Preds forward Michael McCarron. We've got to win to stay alive again, so we're going to need the same effort and the same mindset going into our game on Friday. I think if we keep the same mindset that we had going into that last game, it'll give us the best chance to win. Another quote, I think the message is we've got to play much better than we did in Game 5. A bit of a surprising quote from head coach Andrew Burnett,
yeah,
considering they won the game. He also said it's kind of one day and one game at a time here. Home ice means nothing, as we figured out. It's more about our game, and our game has to be a little bit better. Again, a weird quote coming from the coach that,
yeah,
won the game, but nonetheless,
mm-hmm,
the Preds are at home. The game is underway now. About 10 minutes in, still 0-0. Better start than in Games 3 and 4 when Vancouver got on the board early in both of those games.
Yeah.
Preds have been the more physical team from what I've seen, have been the more aggressive team from what I've seen. But Silovs, like I talked about a minute ago, has already made a couple highlight reel saves in this game. He's already faced three shots, saved all three of them. This is going to be one that is probably going to get our blood pressure up a little bit for us Preds fans. It's going to be one where you have to win on home ice in a series where you have not won on home ice yet.
Yeah.
But you also have the credit of you're 2-1 on the road.
Mm-hmm.
This is not a series where the home team has had a ton of success. 4-1 for road teams in this series so far. It's going to come down to, you know, can you do what Dallas did the other night? And Dallas, you know, when we talked about it 2 days ago, that series was all four road teams. Dallas,
mm-hmm,
is the first home team to win in that series. Now they can close the series on the road in Vegas tonight.
Yeah.
Nashville, obviously, if they can send this back to Vancouver and get two straight wins in this series. I mean, we've seen it time and time again in sports, the 3-1 lead.
You've already won there twice, too.
You've won there twice in a series, but we've seen in sports the 3-1,
yeah,
lead. If you can push it to a Game 7, who knows what's going to happen? Now you've taken all the momentum, especially if you get a good Juicy Saros performance tonight.
Yeah.
You've taken all the momentum, and now you head to Vancouver with a chance to beat an inexperienced team. You've got a ton more experience than they do. You've got guys. Ryan O'Reilly has seen Game 7s. Gus Nyquist, mm-hmm, has seen Game 7s. Philip Forsberg has seen a couple, now not as many, but these guys have been in do-or-die playoff games.
Yeah.
If you can get it back to Vancouver, who knows what's going to happen in the Preds. I mean, what a monster opportunity that this is. It's a rocking environment, by the way.
I bet, yeah.
I've already seen some videos of Bridgestone tonight. It's rocking. Broadway is packed. They're doing the watch party on Broadway again like they did several years ago.
Yeah.
It's packed out. There's a ton of people down there. It's a rocking environment. You got to take advantage. Can they win this series? Absolutely. Anybody can win the series as long as the series is still going. Will they? If they win tonight, I think they will.
Yeah.
If Vancouver does not win tonight's game, I think Nashville wins Game 7 in Vancouver.
You got all the momentum.
Because now you've won two in a row, and you've kind of found your footing after, I mean, Game 4.
Really should have been a win.
The response you've gotten after Game 4,
yeah,
has been incredible.
Mm-hmm.
And so tonight, if you can win this game, if you can have a good performance, I think you win Game 7. Your opinion, can the Preds do the unthinkable?
Well, if they get the win tonight, I think they can. And the weird thing about this series is the Preds have dropped both of them at home. And, you know, after going on the road and getting a win, Nashville has one of the best home environments in the NHL. This place is rocking tonight. You've done the job on the road. You've gotten two wins. Now it's just time to settle in at home. Currently, Vancouver's on pace for 12 shots on goal. So if you're going to continue that, then this looks, you know, looks like a good situation for Nashville, going back to that physicality that they displayed in Vancouver the other night. You know, look, they understand that they are, you know, in a tough situation here. How do you win a game by being, you know, in a 3-1, 3-2 deficit? By being the more physical team? By, you know, I hate saying this, by wanting it more? You know, because some of these teams go up 3-1, they're like, okay, we'll just naturally get a game, you know, we'll naturally win one, right? But in this situation, you know, if you're the more physical team, if you're able to win the faceoff advantage like they were like they were the other night, 35-22. If you're able to keep it to 12 shots on goal for the night, that's a recipe for success. I think the Predators, if they win tonight, they'll go on the road and get it done. It'll be a tough environment there, too. You understand that. You've already been this team twice there. It shouldn't faze you.
Well, it's where that veteran presence, like I said, yeah. Ryan O'Reilly, when the St. Louis Blues won the Stanley Cup in 2019, Ryan O'Reilly, they had to play a Game 7 in the Stanley Cup Final at the TD Garden in Boston, which over the past several decades is one of the most intimidating environments to play in postseason hockey. So you've got guys on the roster that have been there. They've done that. They know how to win big Game 7s. Vancouver can't say the same. This is a very young Vancouver team. The Preds have some value of experience. We'll see. Still 0-0 about 13 minutes in down at Bridgestone Arena. Move to the NFL for the second story tonight. The Miami Dolphins have added another piece to their offensive juggernaut. The team announced the signing today of wide receiver Odell Beckham Jr.
Yeah.
Source confirmed to ESPN as Miami again tries to add a big-time piece to a receiving corps still seeking both veteran presence and a third option behind Tyreek Hill and Jalen Waddle. The source said it will be a one-year deal worth $3 million with incentives that push the max value to $8.25 million. Beckham visited the team back in March. The sides were not able to reach an agreement then. General Manager Chris Greer said before the NFL draft there was nothing imminent on a deal with Beckham. Miami selected two receivers in the draft, but that did not stop them from signing the three-time Pro Bowler. Greer also said, quote, "We're always looking to add to the roster and have the most competitive roster we can to make the team better. As we've always talked, competition is what breeds excellence." Beckham, now 31, joins a receiving room that features Hill and Waddle, along with Braxton Berrios, River Craycraft, Eric Izukanma, I'm not sure who that is, and new rookies Malik and Taj Washington, who were both drafted by the Dolphins this year, as he looks to slide in as the third receiver on the depth chart. Since Mike McDaniels was hired in 2022, no receiver other than Hill or Waddle has had more than 32 catches or more than 417 yards in a season, as a majority of the targets run through the top two wideouts. McDaniel, though, is excited about the opportunity, stating Odell has had a phenomenal career and still has really, really good football in front of him and has options. Beckham remains one of the most popular names in the NFL despite a slip in production over the past several years. Yeah. He has failed to eclipse 50 catches or 600 yards in each of his past three seasons, but all three were heavily impacted by injuries. He tore his left ACL in 2020 with Cleveland. He re-injured the knee in 2021 with the LA Rams, sat out all of 2022, and then proceeded to suffer from some injury issues and production issues in Baltimore in 2023. I'm not sure what he gives them because I don't know what version of him you're going to get. Now, when he was on the field for Baltimore, he had some moments. Now, he still wasn't the number one guy there either. Zay Flowers was obviously, you know, their number one guy. Mark Andrews, when he wasn't hurt, was their number two guy.
Yeah.
So he's not going to be the number one in Miami either, but he at least adds – I think he adds the most promising third piece that they've had. Is that fair to say? Outside of tight ends, because obviously Mike Gesicki gave them a good third option. But
yeah, well, you got Mark Andrews on there too, right?
Did Andrews go to Miami? I thought he was still in Baltimore.
I'm thinking about the.
I thought you were gonna catch me off guard.
I'm still thinking about Baltimore with yeah. You're right. Yes, Mike Gesicki. Look, I think he's a good wide receiver three option. Obviously, and also I totally forgot he played for the Cleveland Browns. It just shows how all over the place he's been.
Because he tore his left ACL early in the season.
Yeah. But I think the biggest winner out of this whole thing is Tua Tagovailoa. Because now you've got three options. You know Jalen Waddle and Tyreek Hill are going to do their thing. Now you get kind of a wild card in Odell. He could be really big for you. He might not play a whole lot. You don't know. But it's kind of the risk you run. But you know he's in his career, he's played really good football. Another interesting tidbit, this reunites Jalen Ramsey and Odell Beckham. You know, they spent the last time with the Rams. Now with the Dolphins now.
The Rams won a Super Bowl that year, too.
Yeah, exactly.
Now, granted, Beckham got hurt, but still.
Yeah. If they can get that version of Odell Beckham, then that's a win for them. And I think if you get last year's version of Odell Beckham, that's a win as well. Because they've got guys on the roster. They've got playmakers. Achan, Mostert, they've got playmakers. Adding Odell into the mix, I think, is a good idea. It gives them another weapon. I don't mind at all. I think it's a good move for him, too.
I think so, too. If Tua cannot win against good teams with this offense now, with Odell in there, with A-Chain, with Jalen Wright on the roster as well, if you can't win with this offense, Are you going to win with any offense? That's kind of my question. This has made 2024 into a Tua Tagovailoa prove it year, has it not?
My bold prediction is the Dolphins draft a quarterback next year.
Really?
Or trade for one. Tua Tagovailoa is not the answer, in my opinion.
Well, see, I floated Tua getting traded this past offseason.
Well, I did too.
Weird scenarios. Maybe they trade him to Chicago to get Justin Fields.
Well, yeah. In one of my mock drafts, I had Michael Penix going to Miami. And when I was doing it, I was like, look, I know it sounds ridiculous. They've got Tua. But I don't think he's the option after this year. He cannot win the big games. He cannot win in the playoffs. And look, you can go run up the scoreboard against the Panthers or, you know, last year's Chargers team. But when it comes down to the games, you have to win against the teams that are above 500. They've only won like one game since week three of, you know, 2 years ago.
And looked really bad. And some of the Ravens game last year was abysmal.
Yeah.
This is a prove-it year for Tua. And in my opinion now, if it wasn't before, which I think it was before,
yeah,
it really is now that you've got Odell Beckham and some other weapons you drafted
on
the roster.
Yeah.
We'll go to the NBA now, and we'll circle back to this story. Patrick Beverley is in the news again, this time regarding a couple of things. Firstly, a video taken of him during the Bucks' season-ending 120-98 loss in Indiana on Thursday. Camera showed Beverley picking up a ball and throwing it into the stands. The ball hit a fan in the head sitting in the lower part of the seats. After a different fan had initially thrown the ball back to Beverley when it went out of play, Beverley caught the ball and fired it back into the fans. He declined to answer a question about it when speaking to reporters after the game. Now, he did reply to a post on Twitter about the incident that showed the video. He said, quote, "Not fair at all. Exchanged between a fan and our ball club all night. We warned and asked for help all night. Not fair." Then 6 hours later, he posted again under that tweet saying, "But I have to be better, and I will." That was not the only bit of controversy, though, for Pat Bev on Thursday night. Also, in that post-game media session, Beverley would not allow ESPN producer Melinda Adams to ask him a question after discovering she did not subscribe to his podcast. He told her to get the microphone out of his face and eventually asked her to leave the interview circle altogether. Adams later posted on Twitter that Beverley had apologized, as did the Bucks organization. She said, quote, "I want to thank everyone for their kind words and support. I am humbled. Patrick Beverley just called me and apologized. The Bucks also reached out to apologize as well. I've been in news for over 40 years. Kindness and grace always win." Bucks coach Doc Rivers said Friday that he has spoken to Patrick Beverley. He said, quote, "That's not the Milwaukee way or the Bucks way." Rivers said, interesting from a guy who's never coached
Does
the
he know
Bucks.
What the Bucks way is?
He also said, quote, "We're better than that. Pat feels awful about that. He also understands emotionally. This is an emotional game and things happen. Unfortunately, you're judged immediately, and he let the emotions get the better of him." You said it earlier, and I think it hit what I was going to say too. Patrick Beverley likes to do stuff like this. I don't know what gets into him when his team is about to be eliminated from the playoffs, but it's almost like he's like, okay, my team's about to lose. Let me get the attention off my team losing and put it on me. Let me do something that people are going to be like, what are you doing? And again, the push to Chris Paul comes to mind a few years ago. And to be fair, it worked because for the several days after the series, that's what Suns fans talked about.
Yeah.
Is Patrick Beverley. He continues to do this, and then he'll do this. I have to be better. But then he'll go and do something else the next year or the next week that he's not any better.
Him and Draymond Green, if they went to dinner, they'd have a lot to talk about.
I don't get it. I've never seen someone fire a ball back into the stands like he did last night. That was wild.
Unprofessional.
A guy that likes the sound of his own name, likes his name being in the media for the wrong reasons, and another scandal. Just completely avoidable. I don't care what. And I don't know if you saw today, apparently, I don't know if this is true, but apparently the fan that was so upsetting to Patrick Beverley, they were in a huddle,
yeah.
Cancun on three.
Yeah.
which, by the way, is hilarious if they were that upset about it. But no matter what, another controversy for Patrick Beverley. What do you make of this?
Well, first off, I think it's unprofessional. You're a veteran in this league. You're an example for a lot of guys on that roster that are young, like an Andre Jackson that got drafted by out of UConn. So you're an example. You're an example to undersized guards. You're an example to guys in that locker room of how, you know, a day-to-day NBA player acts and how you act when you face adversity. if throwing a basketball into the stands is the way you approach it, I think that's very poor taste. The second thing, and he's probably not thinking of this while he did it, but it's indirectly really good marketing for his podcast. Everyone's talking about it now.
Oh, absolutely.
You know? So if you're trying to – bad publicity is sometimes good publicity. And I'm not saying that I want to have, you know, bad publicity on me to boost my name. But some people, though, when bad things happen, they're more talked about. I mean, O.J. Simpson was a huge deal because of, you know, he was a star. He goes through the murder trial. Everyone knows him because of that trial. So bad publicity is sometimes good publicity. I don't think he was thinking of that when he did it. But having answers like, do you subscribe to my podcast? That sounds like he's, you know, premeditating that. Like, okay, I know this is going to make, you know, this is going to make airwaves and make waves on social media. Might as well throw some free advertising in there. But my third piece on this is, from a player's perspective, they cannot engage in this stuff. As I said earlier in the first hour, this is how you get right back to the malice in the palace. You know, interactions with fans have been very delicate in the NBA. We've seen, you know, middle fingers thrown to Russell Westbrook. We've seen LeBron James tell, you know, someone courtside to leave. You know, it's very common in the league to have in these high-pressure moments these playoff games where, you know, the fans are all riled up. They've been drinking all day. The players are riled up because they're going home. This is how you have a recipe for disaster, and it just can't happen in the league. And I'm interested to see what kind of punishment Patrick Beverley will get.
All right. I mean, we're about out of time. So I was going to do a quick little preview of the NBA and NHL playoffs, but I think we're running a little bit low on time. The other game tonight in the NHL, just real quickly, Dallas and Vegas.
Yeah.
That series could end tonight. We've talked about the NBA already.
Yeah, good deal. All right, we'll head to a break real quick. When we come back, we'll touch on a couple of those games coming up tonight and this weekend when we return here on Overtime.
Ever been the coach who realized the team's gear just wasn't up to par? Well, if I'm being honest, that was me. Just a downright irresponsible and plain bad coach. Then SM Athletics changed the game. I want you to picture this. I walk into their store, a coach with a vision. SM Athletics didn't just see a coach. They saw a team's potential. And they delivered custom uniforms so striking. Our team spirit soared. From cutting-edge apparel to top-notch equipment, SM Athletics transformed our presence. No more unreliable online orders or envying the other team's style. SM Athletics stands for quality, design, and on-time delivery every time. Coaches, elevate your team with SM Athletics. Call 865-966-3434 or visit smathletics.com. Get the best for your team, delivered right and on time. So, elevate your team's game by contacting SM Athletics today.
Rev up your savings at Volunteer Auto Group, your one-stop destination for quality vehicles at unbeatable prices. Cruise through their vast selection of pre-owned cars, trucks, and SUVs. They've got the flexible financing options that make it easy for you to drive home today. Volunteer Auto Group, where every deal's a winner. 1501 Callahan Drive. Check them out online at volauto.com and tell them Fan Run sent you.
At Wholesale Supply, we're more than just a plumbing, electrical, and HVAC supplier. We're your partners in success. Join our family of customers today and experience the benefits of partnering with us. Enjoy free local delivery so you can focus on what you do best, getting the job done. With wholesale pricing, you'll save big on every purchase. Plus, our fast, friendly support team is here to assist you every step of the way. Our vast selection from top manufacturers ensures you'll find everything you need all under one roof.
It's baseball season, meaning summer's just around the corner, and your friends at Fan Run Radio are here to help you kick off summer right at the ballpark. Join us for our first ever Fan Run Night at Smoky Stadium on May 30th. Besides the game with Chattanooga, there'll be in-game activities, $3 beers for Thirsty Thursday, and you'll get to do it all with the Fan Run team. Also, 37 club members get free admission to the game. So keep it locked in on Fan Run Radio for more details to follow, and save the date for May 30th.
A couple updates for you while you're cruising around town with your surround sound. Vols now trail 3-0, or
3-0, yeah.
Yeah, 3-0, yeah. Vols trail 3-0 to Florida. And what inning is that in?
It's in the third, top of the third, top of bottom of the third, I think.
Bottom of the third. Florida's knocked out, is that two homers, you
yeah.
said? Two
yep.
homers for Florida. Drew Beam off to a tough start. Also in the association, the Magic have an early lead on the Cavs. Paolo Banchero, only 4 points. You know, we talked about him yesterday being the best player in the series.
Don't listen to my best bet tonight. 30-plus points. I don't know.
Yeah.
Not looking good.
Well, you know, I mean.
It could turn it on pretty quickly, I guess, but not looking good right now.
But for my best bet, that'd go against that.
Well, yeah.
So, you know. Magic and Cavs, I think, the winner of tonight will be the Magic. I think they'll get it done at home up early. I think Cavs-Magic Game 7 will be fun. I think this is the first time the game's been nationally televised tonight, too. Actually, Game 1 was nationally televised, but every single one of them's been on NBA TV. It's the NBA TV game. The one that's in between the other two. And then tomorrow night, Nuggets, Timberwolves. We talked a little bit about that with Joshy. But, I mean, I think the winner of this series goes to the finals. I think the Mavericks could give the Nuggets a fight. I think the Mavericks could give the Timberwolves a fight. But I think the Nuggets and Timberwolves are the better, well-rounded teams. I don't see the Thunder pulling out a win over the Magic or the Clippers. I think the Clippers' funeral's tonight. Wearing a black tie to that.
The funeral for the James Harden experience, you think?
Yeah. It's one of these funerals you smile. Like,
wow.
Okay, stop.
That's,
okay, that maybe, right. Okay, yeah, maybe we, you know, we got 3 minutes. Probably shouldn't be saying that. But I've never been a Clippers guy, so, you know.
Certainly not a James Harden guy. Not a fan of the James Harden experience.
Well, look, I'm a Grizzlies fan. I've never liked the Clippers.
That's fair. All right, yeah.
Back when Blake Griffin's back when Blake Griffin used to come in the grindhouse and cause problems, but I don't know, I just never liked that group. And then the other problem is one of my roommates is a big Clippers fan, and he's one of those fans that calls himself a fan but watches 3 games during the regular season,
right?
And then come playoff time, you know, puts on the jersey.
Okay, I mean, fair, but also, you know, I'm a Suns fan. I don't watch a ton of games during the regular season because either they're not on TV. Because
that's fair. I know, but
they're not in market, or, you know, it's 11 o'clock at night when they start.
I know, that's fair. But you keep up with them, though, right?
I do, yeah. Pretty in tune, especially, you know, like this when it's really bad. Yeah.
I'm not saying you have to watch every game, but I think you do need to, if you're going to call yourself a fan and flaunt it come playoff time, you need to at least keep up with the team.
Okay.
You see what I'm saying?
Yeah, I see the difference now.
Yeah. Yeah. So that, and, you know, I've always been hard on the Clippers. So when they do well, I look like an idiot. So I don't want to look like an idiot, right?
I don't think you're going to tonight. And
yeah.
I don't think the Clippers escape this game either.
Yeah. So I poorly phrased the Clippers funeral thing. If I could get canceled for that.
You're happy about the Clippers' downfall. Let's
yes.
put it that way.
I'll smile at the Clippers'
downfall. You'll smile
downfall.
At the Clippers. There you go. Yeah.
So take that bit, people. don't take the first bit. And then Knicks Pacers. What do you? I think the intriguing matchup is Nembhard on Brunson.
Nembhard on Brunson.
You know, is Brunson able to still have that same success with now having a guy that's picking you up full court, not Kyle Lowry's big booty ass? You know. rolling up and down the court.
Was not prepared for that one today.
Yeah.
Oh.
Oh, my goodness. but, yeah, going back to the next Pacers series, I think the interesting thing over the course of this season has been how Tyrese Haliburton in the first part of the year was, you know, looking like one of the best players in the league. And ever since that hamstring injury, hasn't really been able to put up the same level of production he was doing pre-All-Star game.
Right.
But I think what he's doing right now helps the Pacers out because he's not taking a ton of shots, but he's facilitating and still putting in about 16, which is what he's averaged since February 1st. I don't know. I don't think the Pacers beat the Knicks. I think the Knicks are the better team. But I think that's another fun series, almost as fun
series
as the
series that goes six or maybe the distance,
yeah.
I think, probably.
With the current field, who do you think are the final two teams? You know, one at each conference.
Going to the NBA Finals?
Yeah.
Probably, I mean, the the easy answer Celtics, is Nuggets Celtics,
yeah,
right?
Yeah.
If I had to not pick one of them, it'd be probably T-Wolves Knicks, I think.
Which would be such an odd series. Just saying T-Wolves Knicks
would not be the series. Like I'm not even used to either of those teams having playoff success in my life.
The Celtics and Knicks, like, you get two historical teams. Even if the Sixers won, you'd have a historical team. But Celtics Knicks, a Knicks finals would be awesome.
Oh, those environments at MSG would be some of the best in sports for the year by far, right? I mean,
yeah, I quote tweeted it earlier today. There's a video from outside the stadium last night, and it's like a camera and a microphone in front of all these Knicks fans. They're acting like buffoons. It's hilarious. Like, there's one guy bought a Philly cheesesteak and just like rubbed it in his face and threw it down. It was crazy. And it was like 12-year-old dog cussing Embiid.
Oh yeah, it's expected.
Awesome. I love it. I love it though. That's fandom. That's fandom.
Absolutely.
People from all walks of life coming together and celebrating a Knicks win. I love it. All right, we've gone overtime here on Overtime. We appreciate you listening to us on a Friday. We'll be back on Monday to break down all the NBA action and the results from the Tennessee and Florida series. We appreciate you joining us. For Dawson Wise, William Patterson, we'll see you on Monday.